This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Orioles Guardians game one of a four-game series tonight. First pitch at 6:40. Baltimore baseball tonight. We're done a little early today at 5:30. BBT. It'll be Mike Bordick and yours truly, and we'll get a look at some more of the
Trevor
Orioles
Rogers baby
trade deadline.
Eat some innings.
Acquisitions, and joining us now, Kylie McDaniel, who covers MLB, farm system for ESPN. And Kylie, let's start with the O's. In your opinion, did they do enough at the trade deadline?
I'm here to eat some valuable sports radio innings. I'm gonna go with yes. I think they did enough. I think they could have done more. Obviously, you'd love to see. I mean, I don't know how you guys feel about this, but Jack Flaherty, it'd be great if Scooble or Crochet yes. could be pried out of where they were. But getting Eflin and Rogers, I think, gives them enough. You'd like to see more. Maybe this offseason you'll see more. Obviously, Corbin Burns on the way out the door, at least to free agency, yeah. maybe somewhere else. That, I think, is the question. But with, you know, Means and Bradish and some of those guys and Bautista, like, on the way back, like, there might be enough that this could be fine this year and next year without having to do anything drastic.
I just, Kylie, can't help have my head flash forward to October and what we've seen of Kimbrel. And, you know, Soto, I think he's a lefty-lefty guy, period. Like, if he's got a pitch and hole inning, if there's pinch hitters from the right side involved, that's trouble. Even Dominguez, like, I don't know that he's going to close. I don't know that you want Cano closing. And I don't, like, is the ninth inning going to be their bugaboo?
I mean, you would like to go into the playoffs feeling like the Padres do, like, we have four closer-level guys. They have, obviously, other problems.
Yes.
You'd like to say, we got enough starting pitching, we got enough stars in the lineup, we got enough guys in the bullpen. It may or may not work, but we feel good about it. There obviously is a hesitation. Is there quite enough, you know, after you get past Burns and then whichever reliever is going hot at the time, maybe you throw Grayson Rodriguez in there, maybe you throw Eflin in there. But I think the teams that win the World Series, like, if you look at the, you know, the Phillies teams that we've seen of the past, where there's multiple aces, multiple relief aces, like, that's kind of what you want. Mm-hmm. I don't think the Orioles are at that level. And obviously last year's experience in the playoffs makes you think, like, oh, we have to overwhelm it with talent. We can't just go with what works in the regular season. I think that was more of a one-off, a fluke, you know, team that hadn't been in the playoffs, you know, some bad luck, et cetera. I think this team will do better, but yes, they could have done more. Also, I'm reminded of a conversation I had with an executive leading up to the deadline where I was asking, what do you think Baltimore's going to do? And he's like, they can't really change their stripes. Like, they haven't been an overdo it, trade a bunch of prospects, make the big splashy move team this entire time Michael Eisen has been there, except for the Corbin Burns move. That's been the one move where it's been, hey, let's push some chips in. And there hasn't really been another one. And it's all kind of worked out in the big picture. And we're about to get to that point where you have to show the results in the playoffs. And I guess this will be another important data point is how it works out this year.
That's exactly where I was going to go, Kylie, where now we've seen Mike Elias at two trade deadlines being buyers, and it's a more measured approach, and he's held on to all of his top guys. Do you expect to see that each year, you know, him being reluctant to push his chips to the center of the table?
I think so, because that's, if you even think back to when he was in Houston, obviously not the guy in charge, they had to push the chips in to get a rental Bryce Harper that didn't end up happening. I believe that one was nixed by ownership, if I'm remembering correctly. But that was like the one time they had made that big move in Houston. And I've seen a version of it here in Atlanta. I used to obviously work with the Braves, mm-hmm. and so I was there with a lot of those prospects, and we saw Alex Anthopoulos not make bold moves because he had all these prospects coming up and didn't want to give away the one that turns into the dude. And so he held on to everybody, didn't make the trade for Real Muto or Chris Sale or Yelich, these big guys that all came up, didn't make the huge free agent signing. And then once the farm system dried out, then he had to start making bolder moves. That's when he won the World Series, when he started making some bolder moves at that deadline where he added like four hitters and stuff kind of worked out. Because I think there is something, whether it's clubhouse chemistry or the team can tell that you care or, you know, just sort of a tangible thing. When you push the chips in, your odds go up. There's not a lot of teams that have tried to straddle and be good for three different years at the same time and then win a World Series. It just doesn't happen. I can't totally explain why, but it doesn't happen. And I kind of wonder if they're looking at, hey, well, we got Bradish, we got Means, we got Batista, you got those, you know, Westberg all coming back. We got Holiday, Mayo, Bisaio, you know, Povich. We got all these guys here. Let's wait until next year when they're all here. And then maybe we don't need to add anybody. But that typically, I can't think of a team that's won a World Series doing that. So maybe you're going to have to wait a year or two for that to play out. And also, for the record, this will be published later in a week or two at ESPN.com. They still have the number one farm system in baseball. like it's not like this is going to end tomorrow. They don't have to solve it right now. And I think that might be a bit of a blessing and a curse, is that they don't have to push their chips in. And they have so many chips that they're just not doing it and just going to see if they can do it anyway.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Where are you on the future of this farm system, though, Kylie? Because you got Jackson Holiday, Kobe Mayo, Samuel Bisaio, three guys, consensus top 15 prospects across the board. I mean, Jackson's going to graduate, you would think, by the end of the season. Mayo not far behind. When a couple of those guys graduate, where do you foresee this farm system ranking?
Well, so the way I do the rankings is that, let's just say Mayo and Holiday graduate tomorrow, which obviously will not happen, but eventually they will. That would take them from first with a pretty good lead down to roughly average, like 15th, give or take, and still have a long track record. I think Bisaio will probably be a year behind those guys.
Yeah.
They still have a long track record of finding guys, especially hitters, in the middle to later rounds, turning them into dudes, doing well with trades. Like, they are a machine that has been producing talent, and this is like the crest. When those three guys come up to join everyone that's here, that's like the wave where you have like a five-year window before those guys start, like, you know, turning down extensions and getting close to free agency, and you got to start making choices. We'll find out if ownership wants to, you know, run the payroll up, which, you know, I'm sure there will be a limit to where that will go. You've now opened that window with all of these sort of home run hits and draft and free agency and trades and things like that. So then the question will be, can they build it up while competing from an average farm system, let's say the middle of next year, to then being top 10 again and doing a version of what the Dodgers are doing, but without the payroll? Because I think that will be the big difference, is they can't then, or could, probably won't then go add Mookie Betts, Freddie Freeman, Yamamoto, Ohtani on top of what was already a good team and a well-paid team. I would imagine that that move is not going to be there at the end. Can you do it internally? And we've seen teams like Tampa, or maybe just Tampa, you know, Cleveland kind of, you know, does it here and there with even smaller payrolls. But they are typically not actually competing for the World Series every year, the way that we've seen, you know, the peak of the Yankees recently with the Dodgers. Like, those teams don't actually make it all the way because, again, they're doing that thing where they're trying to be good every year for the next 5 years rather than trying to be good 1 year. And I think somewhat paradoxically, you kind of have to pick one or the other. And I think that decision will be forced probably 2 years from now.
Well, Kylie, when we drill down on what they did do, and I'm someone who loves minor league baseball and I love monitoring prospects and watching prospects, but I don't believe in hoarding prospects. So I've been pushing them to go bigger. Like, when you look at what they did, I love the Eflin deal. I don't think they're going to fix Rogers, but whatever. Norby and Stowers had no future here. The only one that gave me pause, and it's similar to last year, where throwing Zach Showalter in that deal for Flaherty, I didn't like. Seth Johnson, and I know he hasn't thrown more than 69 pitches in an outing, and I know he's already on the 40-man, and I know it's hard to build a guy up who missed that much time, but people are killing Dombrowski for trading the two high A arms he did to get a legitimate closer, and I'm like, well, his starting staff is loaded, and then he brings back Seth Johnson for a lefty-lefty guy who they didn't even like in Philadelphia anymore. Like, I don't know. Like, the Seth Johnson of it for Soto, That's the one where I'm like, from a prospect standpoint, I think they paid too high a price.
That would surprise me because Seth Johnson was a guy I really like going back to his draft years, when Tampa had him, to when Baltimore grabbed him coming off of TJ. And like you said, he's on the 40-man, hasn't thrown a lot of innings. He was also like a converted shortstop to pitcher that had been built up and then had a TJ. So he had a long period where he just didn't throw very much. And so building him up to where he is a 150-inning starting pitching asset is still going to take a few more years. He's not pitching great this year. I think that was something that we've seen teams like Tampa and the Yankees and the Dodgers have, which is a 40-man crunch where you end up with too many guys that you would then lose in the Rule 5 draft. So then the week before everyone has to add their players to the 40-man roster, this is, you know, a sort of convoluted explanation for if your system is too deep with good players, at some point you'll end up with too many of them. And so I think that was a little bit of what they were doing there, is clearing out a little bit of the depth of the second-tier guys that are probably not going to be impact types, and then also managing the 40-man a little bit. I am not worried about any of these guys. I have Connor Norby as the best prospect they traded, and I think, you know, you guys are probably aware. He's a fine player, probably what would scouts would call a role five, a low-end starter slash, you know, good player. Like, could he be Chris Taylor someday? That's like his best-case scenario. I don't think he'll be that. So I think he's a good player. And then I think the three players for Eflin, I think Horvath and Bowmeister both could be good, but I wouldn't count on them being impact guys. These Holiday, Mayo, Basayo, Gunnar Henderson, like these dudes are different. Like those are the guys you build around. These are the depth guys. If you trade 10 of them, one or two of them are going to hurt. They've traded now like five or six of them. I don't think it's going to hurt, but if they do it a couple more years in a row, there's going to be a guy that hurts a little bit. But Baltimore also has like the best group of just young players, 25 and under, in all of baseball. This is, again, a thing that happened in Atlanta the last couple of years, where now that's dried up a bit. But they had such a crazy run of talent, all signing extensions, that you basically have to have all of these guys get hurt in 1 year, which is what just happened. So they should not be a threat to be like one of the top three teams in the National League. And I think that's the kind of run Baltimore's about to go on. So I would say prepare yourself that we're finding things to complain about. They're pretty small things. They're going pretty well.
He's Kylie McDaniel, baseball insider for ESPN. Kylie, thanks so
much
for joining us.
Yeah, I ate some innings and I tossed you guys off the ledge.
You did more than eat innings. Thank you so much. You closed that segment.
Closed it out. Complete game, some might say.
Yes.
Hell's bells, play it for me.
There you go. Thanks,
you got it.
Kylie.
Thank you.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.